Hi, my name is Andrew Keene. I'm a systems administrator at Michigan State University. I'm here to talk about our experiences in setting up a greenfield HPC environment. High-performance computing is using parallelized applications to solve computationally intensive problems at larger scales than are possible on PCs. Think supercomputing, but at a different scale. Greenfield is a term that I borrowed from industrial development, and it refers to development on sites that have not had any industrial development on them before, in contrast to brownfield, which has existing infrastructure that is constraining you on site. I thought this was an interesting way to talk about our experiences developing an HPC environment. The title of the talk is Lessons Learned, but it's really one lesson. You need to consider the entire ecosystem when building a resource like this. There are many technical and non-technical resources that you need to provide to make a resource successful. I've tried to pull out a few of the issues that we've addressed and address them. Before I move on, I actually want to mention that when I first put together this slide, I didn't have users on this slide, which is crazy, right? I mean, if you don't have users, what's the point? We're here to support research, not to run computers. MSU is a large land-grant university. We have over 50,000 students. We're a member of the AAU, and we do a lot of research from agricultural economics to zoology. We're the Spartans. Our football team is usually mediocre, but the men's basketball team is usually pretty good. We've had HPC resources on campus since 1956, but over time, the computational resources have changed away from the central computational resources, transitioned away from scientific computing. In 2004, MSU faculty saw the need for a computational center because of the growing use of computation in various fields, and even traditional HPC fields, the need for a resource was growing. So they went to the administration and got funding for that resource. And so when we started up the system, we met with stakeholders, identified the applications that we were talking about using, and used those in an RFP process. We reviewed proposals, selected a winning bid from a famous name, it ran it through acceptance testing, passed fine, and we started running jobs on it. And things were good until they weren't. As we added more and more work to the systems, users began complaining about the speed of the system. By looking at the I/O profile of the system, we noticed that we'd massively underbuilt our storage infrastructure for a typical workload. We just didn't have enough disk I/O operations to keep the processors busy when running multiple jobs of one type. One option would have been to make the I/O resource, I/O bandwidth, a consumable, schedulable resource, but we decided that we actually wanted to support running multiple jobs on the system. So we bought and upgraded a fiber channel disk shelves that added about 20% to the original cost of the system. This was our first expensive lesson in HPC. It's not enough to buy a big pile of hardware. You actually have to have the resources to support it. After our first experience with storage, we've almost overbuilt our storage infrastructure. We use Lustre for our clustered file systems. We use that over InfiniBand. We have gone through three generations, and as we've learned, we've added capacity and redundancy on each revision. You know, nothing good can come from data loss. Users get really, really unhappy when you lose their data, or even when they lose their data. So we really like ZFS. It's open. The Solaris and Open Solaris supports it, Illumos, FreeBSD, and there's even work to bring it to Linux. We've used Open Solaris, and our next solution is using OmniOS. It's fast, with some caveats that I'll talk about in a second, and it's safe. There are a lot of data protection features built into the design of the system. We started in 2008 with the Sun 4540s, but we noticed that users were complaining that that write performance was pretty terrible. They were seeing delays of up to 30 seconds. ZFS has a feature that it won't return the write as a success until it's actually on non-volatile memory, which makes sense, but that delays up to 30 seconds based on if you're using a non-spinning pool. So we added SSDs to the system, which improved both our perceived and measured responsiveness. Our takeaways is from our second generation, which is what we're building right now, is we added more CPUs and failover. We also looked at the OS metrics and noticed that we weren't getting much use out of our read cache SSDs, so we took those out and put a little bit more memory in the system. On the previous slides, I'd mentioned that we'd added failover capacity to our current generations of storage. You know, in general, HPC workloads are not highly available, but that doesn't mean that components of your infrastructure shouldn't be. Your availability requirements depend on how sensitive your workloads are to the disruption. A many task workload that has that can be restarted very easily does not need a lot of redundant infrastructure, but an MPI job where the processes are tightly coupled and checkpoints infrequently, you would want a more robust infrastructure. For us, we found that we've built out a pretty robust infrastructure. We have fully network redundancy on our core infrastructure systems, and as well as virtualizing some of the systems that allow redundancy in case of hardware failure. And we've got a small machine room, but we're fortunate that we were able to get a lot of power and cooling into that space. So we've been using high-density systems since 2007. We target up to 25 kilowatts per rack, which is very difficult to do with underfloor cooling. You can, and NCSA has a 6-foot raised floor, which scares me. But what we did is we've used the Liebert XD systems to provide spot cooling to the systems. We really only care about the temperature in one point in the room, and that's the intake point of the systems that we're running. We don't care that the overall room is 85 or whatever. It doesn't matter. There's no point. It's a waste of resources to try and cool the overall machine room when you can only need the systems themselves to be cold. One thing that you can do to do this is to do cold aisle containment, and this is actually really easy to prototype, and I really wish I had a picture of this. We took cardboard and duct tape it up to the sides of the aisles, and we're able to notice a measured decrease in both room temperature and system temperature, and it was pretty significant. We've since replaced that with some plexiglass, but I highly recommend using hardware management software in your cluster. We use XCAT, which uses IPMI to control the nodes. Also consider when you're selecting a hardware management tool to avoid lock-in. We had one tool that was only worked with one vendor's code, which I'm sure the vendor loved, but our purchasing department did not. So we migrated to an open tool, albeit one maintained by IBM. Another thing when you're buying a cluster is talk to your vendor about how you do firmware updates and BIOS configuration. On our first cluster, there was no way to do this. So when we needed to deploy a new BIOS update, we had to send a poor undergraduate into the room and go through with a keyboard and mouse and set 5 or 6 settings in the BIOS for 100 plus systems. You know, undergrads, but it was still, the other issue is that it was error prone and there was no way to guarantee consistency across the entire system using this method. So I really recommend that there's a way that you can do BIOS updates on your systems, automate that. Imaging is a contentious issue. Some people prefer file-based imaging like System Imager. We use directive-based using Kickstart, controlled by XCAT. Some people prefer diskless booting by Werewolf. There are trade-offs on all of those. For monitoring, we use Ganglia for in-band performance monitoring. We use Cacti for out-of-band network performance monitoring and environmentals. And we use Nagios for availability and alerting metrics. Security in an HPC environment is a negotiation between your users, your administrators, and your compliance people. Even in a university environment, we have to deal with export control. There are, of course, all the other regulations that you would probably know better than I would. Some centers don't allow users to bring in their own executables. All binaries on the system must be deployed by system staff. This burns a lot of system time, but if that's your level of requirement, then you need to do that. One thing I would suggest is take a good look at trusts on your system. A lot of cluster management solutions set up some very permissive trusts that are not very secure. There's no reason that your compute nodes need to be able to SSH into your LDAP server as root. So we move to a single queue model where the only thing that users specify is the resources they need, and the system takes care of finding the appropriate location for those resources, whether it's a general purpose node, or whether that's a node that someone has bought into, or whether it's a node where they can get condo access if they can fit within the scheduling window. Queuing is non-transferable knowledge. The amount of time users spend learning your system is time they're not doing science. So we've tried to make that very simple. We have a very aggressive default time limit of 1 minute on jobs. That gives users immediate feedback that if they're not specifying resources, they should. And we've had one of the things that we've done to support this is to run a single operating system across all of our x86 systems. This may or may not be feasible depending on your environment, but again, we've had good luck with that. Never manage your systems by hand. There's many things that can go wrong with that. You can have a number of different problems. Use either the tools that are provided by your cluster management software, or use Puppet or Beaconfig or CFEngine or any of the other tools. Puppet has a nice feature, and someone has figured out how to set up, integrate Puppet with Git. So you can create a branch on the Git repository that stores your Puppet configuration, make the changes, and run Puppet on the compute node or a test node against that specific branch. It makes doing these testing, these changes, pretty easy, and then you can merge those back into the main branch if that succeeds. You know, I'm a big fan of using division of labor. There are a number of times that we've relied on the central organization's resources. This is always potentially politically problematic, but and you get into some control issues. But we have our central campus network team manage some of our switches, not our HPC switches. We also rely on campus for authentication. Another thing, resources would be to talk to people who have already done this. People love to tell you when you're doing something wrong, and it's better to get that feedback from your peers before you do it than from your users after you do it. Coming to events like this or some of the application-specific conferences can be very useful. Don't reinvent the wheel. Everyone seems to have, at some point, grows frustrated with one of the commonly used tools and says, I hate cacti, or I hate ganglia, I'm going to write my own. And they put a lot of staff time into it, and they release it, and then it dies a lonely death. There are, of course, legitimate reasons to develop your own software, but really, a lot of these resources have been designed in a certain way for a reason. Another option to do is to use distributions like, especially if you're using this, if you're setting up a center for the first time, to use a distribution like ROCKS or the Bright Cluster Manager. There are a lot of little things that can trip you up when setting up an HPC resource. Rocks will avoid most of those. For example, some workload management packages will die if there's a dash in the server name. This has been fixed in most, but it's an example of the kind of little things that you can spend bang your head up against, or you can use their built-in system. Now, built-in systems have limits, but I think that they have provide a lot of benefit. So we've sent out emails to our users, say, we're going to delete your data on Scratch out to our bulk mailing list. And then we started deleting that data, and users started screaming about how their data was gone. So we then went through and found explicitly found everybody that had data on Scratch and sent them a personal email. And that was, we still got feedback on, why are you deleting my stuff? Where's my data? But when I say deleting, so be very careful when deleting data. When I say we deleted their data, what we actually did was archived it off to a separate system. So we were able to be heroes were able to recover that data and avoided some major political issues. We've set up some Twitter feeds off of our wiki based for system availability announcements and general announcements. We haven't seen a big uptake on that, but it was very easy to set up. We haven't promoted it at all, so it may be of use to some people who are on Twitter and follow it religiously. I'd like to quantify some of the assertions I made in this paper. I'm still trying to figure out the best way of doing that. I think that there are ways that I can show the impact of these policies and demonstrate the utility of them. I also want to reach out to other HPC resources and learn how they're doing things. I've done that informally, but I'd like to have a little more formal process for that. There's a lot of disagreement. Some people would disagree about many of the things I've said today. Some people wouldn't, but I would like to be able to say at 34% of the centers surveyed that had budgets of X million dollars, they did it this way. Smaller centers did this and this way, and these are the feedback. This is the feedback that we got from them. So that brings me to the end of my slides. If you want to contact me, my email address is up there, my Twitter handle as well. Are there any questions? So the question was, what examples have I come across that have set up these trusts? And are there any other examples? In XCAT, and don't quote me on this, the management server can SSH to systems that it deploys via XCAT by default. I've seen other packages. Unfortunately, I don't know of any off the top of my head that have done this, but there's an assumption that many pieces of software make is that all the machines in an HPC cluster are trustworthy. This is not true, obviously. One thing that actually caused us some problems is we were running Cacti. This is an embarrassing story. We were running Cacti on our management server, and Cacti, as it is a PHP application, had a security hole, and a random application drove by and exploited that web app, and then was able to go out to our other systems and gain access to those. Now, we probably shouldn't have been running a web public, a web-facing application on our management server, and we don't anymore. But those kind of trusts are where you kind of run into issues. Okay. Any other questions? Well, thank you for your time.